You're listening to Now I've Heard Everything, interviews from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s with voices from the past.
Of course, you always relate the holiday season with snow, no matter where you were brought up. Something so nice about if you're lucky enough to have shelter and have food and be near family to sit by the fire and listen to those Christmas carols.
Actress, author, Deborah Raffin, today on Now I've Heard Everything. I'm Bill Thompson. You know, everyone has memories of Christmas. Now, some of those memories are warm and loving and pleasant. Other memories are, well, sad or troubled in some way. But regardless of whether they're good or bad, troubled or loving, everyone has powerful memories of Christmas. So a few years ago, film and TV actress Deborah Raffin contacted many of her fellow celebrities, both in show business as well as other fields, sports and politics and even world leaders, and asked them for their memories of Christmas. And oh, the responses she got, she put them in a 1990 book called Sharing Christmas. So here now, from 1990, Deborah Raffin.
It all started because I wanted to raise funds for the homeless. All my proceeds go directly to the homeless. And I chose Christmas because to me, or the holiday season, because it's so universal in its appeal and its theme. And also the idea of having people from all walks of life, political arena, entertainers, writers, humanitarians, talk about what the season means to them, whether it's funny, sad, recipes, poems, childhood memories, adulthood memories, whatever it may be. And hopefully it's a book that's, there's something for everyone. I mean, it's very eclectic in its people that are involved, whether it's from Margaret Thatcher, Dolly Parton, Charles Grodin, Kermit the Frog, or Placido Domingo, or even Ivana Trump talking about her Czechoslovakian crepe recipe. It's hopefully it's a book for everyone, and it's something you put by the bedside and you just pull out, you know, look at it right before you're going to sleep and find a lovely story that's touching or funny or whatever it may be.
I was struck by how many people talked about food, whether they gave a recipe or if they just remembered the smell of the Christmas meal cooking, mm-hmm. or the cookies or the popcorn strung on the tree. There's always food mentioned somehow. Mm-hmm. I would notice something like that, you see.
You like food. Do you cook too?
Yes.
You do cook? Oh, good. You might whip up some of these recipes.
I tell you, some
Angela Lansbury has a good sausage one, and Julie Andrews has a great soup Francine.
I was just going to say, there's somebody whose cookie recipe
Jill Eikenberry and Michael Tucker.
Way too.
Filled with butter.
Oh, God. You know, start with 4 pounds of butter and 5 pounds of sugar. Bake for 2 minutes.
Don't worry, it's diabetic. You don't have to worry about
it. But, you know, you have such an interesting, and I suppose you got it that way, but putting these in alphabetical order without grouping them in any other way except by alphabet,
right.
You get that interesting melange of you'll go from the tearjerker, I guess is the way to put it. I mean, a very touching story. To a Lithuanian recipe.
Yeah, which is what I wanted. I wanted each and every page to be a surprise to the reader. I wanted it to be something that was for your every mood and for every walk of life. And and of all denominations. It's very important that this represents people of all denominations. It's sharing Christmas. Christmas to me is a generic term. I mean, it should be everyone. And Art Buchwald talks about being Jewish and how Christmas is the longest day of the year for a Jewish boy. And Charles Grodin has a wonderful piece about being Jewish as well. And hopefully, as I said, it's something for everyone and lots of photographs. You know, Burt Reynolds and his little boy, which you don't usually see. He doesn't have many photographs out with his child, which was very generous of him to give. And they're in tuxedo or Kenny Rogers and his family, or even President Ford and Mrs. Ford sharing their family holiday photograph, which was, I think, very nice because these are very extremely public people showing, in many cases, a very private side. And that's extremely generous of people to do.
Were there any responses? There were a couple in here that surprised me by either how brief and succinct and almost terse they seemed to be, and others by how surprisingly open and warm they tended to be. Were there ones that surprised you when they came in?
Well, Oliver Stone, who's a wonderful film director who did Born on the 4th of July and Platoon, and you know, he's done very gritty, hard-edge films. And his piece is, it's called The Magic Room, and how he reminisces about as a child, this, the room with the tree was considered the magic room to him. It's a beautiful, lovely piece, and I was so shocked when I read this because, and of course, why should I be shocked? We're all human beings. We have moments like that. But it was interesting because most of the people tend to revert back to a simple holiday season, something that doesn't necessarily relate to materialistic objects, or in many cases, childhood memories where they were very poor, whether it be Anthony Quinn talking about being very poor, or even Sidney Poitier talking about being extremely poor and being brought up in the Bahamas, and how his big brother went to America and would send home clothing to Sidney, and how he received these pair of shoes one year, and to him, his big brother was like Santa Claus. And of course, George Burns talking about how he played Santa Claus for his children one year, and he knocked at the door, and his little children opened the door, and he went, ho, ho, ho. And they looked up at him, and they said, Dad, what are you doing? So it's hopefully it's something for everyone in there. And it's, and you know, I have baseball players and I have, you know, very sports figures, Ruben Sierra or Steve Sachs or Cynthia Gregory, if you're interested in the dance world. And so hopefully, you know, as I said, my goal was that it was something for everyone and for every mood.
It also struck me that from in reading these, especially the your fellow Southern Californians, snow seems to be a prerequisite for a decent Christmas, doesn't it?
Oh, I think everyone thinks of. I grew up in California, and for many years always celebrated Christmas in California, and I loved it. I loved Christmas season, but you know, I would always watch it on TV, whether it be a movie or a Christmas special, and they'd always have snow. And of course, you always relate the holiday season with snow, no matter where you were brought up. And now I have a home in Vermont, and my husband and I always go to Vermont for the season, as long as we're not working. And yes, there's something so nice about if you're lucky enough to have shelter and have food and be near family to sit by the fire and listen to those Christmas carols. And
I guess Irving Berlin was right then. There's, you know, just the Southern California being no place for Christmas, you know, to spend Christmas when you're dreaming of the snow is falling. And
yes, well, you have to use a lot of imagination if you're in California.
That's right. Or lots of the styrofoam peanuts.
Yeah, that's right, exactly, where they spray that snow on the trees, you know.
After this short break, Deborah Raffin tells one celebrity's story that may leave you in tears.
Start your day with Now I've Heard Everything.
We post new episodes every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 5 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time.
Subscribe now so you'll have something fresh to listen to and get your day going.
Now back to my 1990 interview with Deborah Raffin.
I would imagine some people were... They got their essays into you just like that. I mean, it was just the next day, FedEx, you know, personal courier. Others you probably had to nudge a little bit.
Well, this was a great learning lesson, this book. It took me 2 years. I started out with thinking I would do it in a year. And I sent out many, many letters. And actually, I was so surprised that some of the people that responded right off the bat, Margaret Thatcher, right off the bat. I was so impressed. And Richard Nixon, Dudley Moore, Ringo Starr, right immediately. Of course, it spoiled me, Julie Andrews. It spoiled me because by the end of this first 6 months, I had about 50 wonderful pieces. And I thought, well, gosh, this is going to be a snap. This is really easy. I can do my mini series, my movies, my plays in between, and these things are just going to fly in. Well, I had these wonderful pieces, but by the end of the year, I still only had about 50, 60 wonderful pieces, and I wanted about 100 for the book, although I ended up with far more, and I have about 130 some odd pieces in the book, and I have 20 that came in too late. But I realized at the end of the first year, I thought, I'm going to have to get on the phone and write a lot more letters and become a bit of a pain in the neck. learn to become, a nag. It was really difficult for me at first. I dreaded it, calling these complete strangers from all around the world and, you know, who I knew were approached by hundreds, thousands of other people in other organizations.
But you're not a no-name. I mean, you've got a little bit of clout behind your name, don't you?
Oh, I mean, there was certainly within a certain realm of walk of life, I got many responses initially because of being aware of my career, but just because I'm an actress, there are more important things in life than acting, and there are a number of people who I approached who were, you know, their priorities were a little different. It wasn't going to the movies. You know, many humanitarians or politicians, or journalists. And so I really just had to push aside any kind of shyness that I may have had and just get on that phone and call those people and say, please, I'll stand on my head. I mean, I took dictation over the phone. I mean, I had Martin Sheen dictating his piece over the phone. I had Dom DeLuise giving his piece over
the
phone.
Great story.
Isn't that wonderful? Yes. Oh, I just love that piece. It's such a lovely piece. It's, as you know, it talks about, he was very, in a bad mood one year, and it was a bad year for him. And his little boy came up to him and said, "Dad, what do you want for the holidays?" And he said, "Happiness." And the little son just sort of acknowledged it and walked away. And then Christmas morning came along, and his little son gave him a box all wrapped up. And he said, "Merry Christmas, Dad." Dom opened the box, and inside was a piece of paper, and written on the paper was "Happiness." Of course, needless to say, he just burst into tears, and certainly put life into perspective for him, and realized that whatever was making him unhappy, he was losing sight of what really meant so much to him, his family and loved ones, and how appreciative he was of just having shelter and food and so on, and all the simple things of life that we all certainly take for granted.
Was that his son Peter, who's the actor now?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I don't know if he's an actor now or not, but he's, quite frankly, I think he's still rather young. Maybe he has other children from a previous marriage. Again, these are not 130 some odd people of my most intimate friends, so I don't really know a lot about their private lives.
Well, why the heck not? Well, everybody in Hollywood knew everybody else intimately.
Sorry. People are always asking me those kind of questions.
Yeah, you're from Washington. You know so-and-so about it.
Yeah, that's right.
were there some in particular that you had to include? I mean, there was no question. It was going in because it just touched you so.
Oh, you know, I have to tell you that it's very hard for me. I am extremely partial with this book, and I am extremely protective of each and every piece, whatever the piece may be. And it's like each one is like a child to me. And so it's hard for me to choose particular favorites. I don't have definite favorites, but there are so many for various reasons that I like. I admire Art Buchwald and both Charles Grodin talking about being Jewish in a bittersweet way, which is, I think, important for people to see. And that Charles Grodin goes into his piece relates to how he now gets, always buys a Christmas tree, even though he's Jewish and his wife is Jewish, and his wife convinced him to buy a Christmas tree. It doesn't have to represent a religious belief. It just represents a celebration of a holiday and bringing people together.
I like Charles Osgood's poem.
Oh, yes.
I mean, you'd expect nothing less from Charles Osgood.
Isn't that a lovely piece?
Mm-hmm.
It's such a sweet piece, talking about as a young boy seeing it's so magnificently written, and I know I won't do it justice, but talking about as a young boy seeing that a glint in someone's eye, an adult's eye, and saying, "What's wrong?" And the man saying, "Oh, nothing, nothing. It's just the glare of the light." And then as he grows older, he has a similar experience over the holiday season, and a glint in his eye, and of course it's a tear in his eye, and a young child looks up to him and says, "What's wrong?" "Oh, nothing, it's just the glare of the light." But of course it's so magnificently written, and I certainly don't feel I'm doing it justice, but they are, you know, Eric Severide's piece is wonderful. There's so many wonderful writers, and Norman Cousins talking about his experience with Albert Schweitzer is magnificent, and how the lepers that he was visiting put on the story of Christmas, and what a magnificent experience, and how it certainly changed his perspective on the holiday season. There's so many.
There's such a poignant mix of pain and enjoyment at the holidays. There's so many people, like Dom DeLuise, for example, who's going through a difficult time, mm-hmm. or somebody who's lost their home in a mudslide and going through terrible crises at a time when they're worried about trying to find gifts or trying to worry about making sure the house looks nice for visitors and things, and they suddenly realize what the holiday's all about.
Absolutely. Martin Sheen talks about how as a young man, his father was, struggling to make a living for the family, and his mother had just recently died, and the holiday season came around, and it was obviously a very depressed one for the family, and depressed emotionally and financially. And the local drunk in the neighborhood, one night, Christmas Eve actually, came knocking at their door, and was standing there with a Christmas tree in his hand, and just gave it to them and walked away into the darkness, because he knew that they couldn't afford a Christmas tree that year. And thereafter, every Christmas Eve, this man would give them a Christmas tree. So it certainly gives you great confidence in the human spirit and makes people realize. I mean, I hope that when people read this book, they laugh and they're entertained and they don't have to think too much with many of the pieces, and other pieces they do have to think. And ultimately it makes them feel good and makes them realize that whatever their problems may be, ultimately, you must look at it with the proper perspective on life and just be grateful for what you do have, even though it sounds as trite as it can be, but it is true.
Deborah Raffin died in 2012 from cancer. She was 59. Now, you can get a copy of Sharing Christmas by Deborah Raffin by tapping the link in our show notes or by going to our website, heardeverything.com. Now, we may earn an Amazon commission if you make a purchase. HeardEverything.com is where you can also find my 1987 interview with the man who took in a stray cat at Christmas time. In fact, he wrote a whole book about it, The Cat Who Came for Christmas, Cleveland Amory.
Now, you call my cat, he'll come full speed, then he'll put on the brakes, and he'll slide to a stop, and he realizes that he has to turn in his union card as a cat if he comes any farther.
And my 1992 interview with Paul Peterson. You may remember Paul Peterson from the Donna Reed Show on TV. Well, Donna Reed, you may remember, was in It's a Wonderful Life. My 1992 interview with Paul Peterson was all about It's a Wonderful Life.
The movie affects me and most everybody. I can't watch it without crying. It's just, and sometimes I start crying in anticipation of the scene, you know?
George, it's a miracle. It's a miracle.
But there's so many wonderful parts. Each of us remembers this movie through a sort of personal lens.
And of course, we post new episodes of Now I've Heard Everything every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And you can find us everywhere you listen to podcasts. And thank you so much for listening. In fact, thank you so much for listening all during Season 5 of Now I've Heard Everything, which today wraps up with this episode. We've now completed 5 seasons of Now I've Heard Everything. That's about 500 episodes in all, and you can find all 500 of those episodes at our website, heardeverything.com. Now, Season 6 will begin on Monday, January 8th, 2024, and I've been culling through my archive. I've been looking. I've been finding some terrific interviews from the past that I can bring out of the vault and share with you in the coming months. So don't miss Season 6 when it premieres Monday, January 8th. And as always, we will post new interviews every Monday, every Wednesday, and every Friday. And thank you once again so much for listening. I'm Bill Thompson.